This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's July 3rd, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hey.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or if you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487 or email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org or on iTunes. Ron's Rant of the Week. It's July 4th. Tomorrow is July 4th. Today's July 3rd. It's July 4th. Okay, I'm going to rant. I'm going to get a little political. Tanks in Washington, D.C.? Really? Really? How about bikes instead? What if we all showed up in Washington, D.C. with millions of bicycles? How about that? Let's think about this. I just, and we'll have our own little pseudo parade, non-military parade. It's a shame, really a shame. Very, very unfortunate. I feel terrible for those of us, those servicemen who are, and women who are unfortunately going to have to be there because they should be home with their families. It's the 4th of July after all. And it's very, very sad to me. That's why I think maybe next 4th of July, we should all go to Washington, D.C. with bicycles. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's an idea. You know, it's an idea.
You want to be in D.C. on the 4th of July?
If it were enough to bring a million bikes in, yeah.
We'd have to get into D.C.
You take the train. Take Amtrak down. Take Amtrak and dump you right out there. Perfect. No problem.
Okay.
We could do that.
Sure.
So, anyway, further discussion about this and on the show in general will be on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk, or you can send us an email. Let us know how you feel about this. On a positive side, on June 25th, Senate Bill 998 was passed by the Oregon House, allowing cyclists to legally yield at stop signs instead of having to come to a complete stop. The law was more than 15 years in the making. How do you feel about that one, Fran? What do you think about that? That you could just come to, if you came to an intersection and it was a stop sign and there was no one coming, you could just yield your way through because you're
right.
on a bicycle and it's legal.
Right. Well, it's very hard to stop. I mean, stopping on a bicycle is kind of a big deal because, you know, if you're clipped in, you have to clip out. If you're pedaling, you have to put your feet on the ground. And if a bike can keep moving, it's more likely to stay upright. If you have to stop too much, you're more likely that the bicycle is going to fall over. That's just how it is.
Right.
So if you can yield, that's a good thing. Of course, so basically you're treating a stop sign like you're going to look. It's not like you're going to just blow through it.
You're not going to blow through it.
You're going to slow down. You're
going
to look both ways, but
right.
you're not going to have to clip out. And you're only going to stop if somebody clearly has the right of way and they're coming and, you know, you have to let them go through. So if they're there before you, you know, if it's a car or a motor vehicle's there
right.
before you, you're going to have to yield to them.
Right.
But I think it's a good idea because in my experience, it's very difficult to stop at a stop sign and it's actually safer to just keep rolling.
So it looks like it passed on July 2nd. So
right.
It has just gone through. Once the bill is signed into law by the governor, Oregon will join several other states in with similar laws, including Idaho, which is named after the Idaho stop, Delaware, and Arkansas. So while opponents claim that the rolling stops encourage reckless behavior and result in more cyclist injuries and fatalities, studies have shown
I don't think that's true.
Such a law has no significant effect. So anyway.
Well, you shouldn't be blowing through a stop sign. You should be slowing down. And yield.
Absolutely.
Yield means, implied in yield is slow down. You're supposed to, when you're yielding right of way, you're slowing down, you're looking both ways before you go, and you're yielding to anybody who's already there. That's what yield means. Yield doesn't mean blow through the stop sign.
Correct. Well, shout out and kudos to the state of Oregon, because it has failed to pass three times prior to this. Once in 2003, once in 2009, and once in 2011. So this time, the bill passed by the Senate a large majority this time at 21-8. The margin was much closer in the House of Representatives, 31-28. It's currently awaiting to get the signature of Governor Kate Brown to go into effect. So pretty cool stuff. So like Delaware and the new Oregon law will only apply to stop signs, allowing riders to treat them as yield signs. Unlike Idaho and Arkansas, it won't allow riders to treat stoplights like stop signs.
Oh, and Idaho and
Arkansas.
And Arkansas, you can treat lights. Mm-hmm. Like that, you can yield at a stoplight.
Right.
Wow.
Right. So, kind of a cool thing. Idaho was the first state to pass a law in 1982. Yay, Idaho. Good for you.
Wow.
And it's widely known as the Idaho Stop. Bicycling advocates have long boasted about the benefits of this law, but only a handful of other states have followed suit since it was first adopted. Mm-hmm. So, and then Delaware introduced its own law in 2017, known as the Delaware Yield, that acts as a rolling stop. It allows the cyclist to yield at stop signs on roads no larger than two lanes across. The bill also included other bike-friendly measures, including requiring drivers to move over to another lane to pass cyclists and prohibiting drivers from beeping their horn at a cyclist unless there's a risk of collision. The law will expire in 2021 unless renewed. Arkansas recently followed suit with its own version of the Idaho Stop as well. So, hey, Connecticut, you paying attention? You know, hey, here we are. We're in the lovely state of Connecticut, where we could use a few more bike-friendly laws, and I like this one. This one's really good. So let's let it happen. I mean, if you take a look, when you're out driving your motorized vehicle, how many people truly stop at a stop sign anyway if they're making a turn?
Or
even if they're going, you know, on a four-way stop.
Are you talking about cars or bicycles?
I'm talking about cars.
Oh, that's a whole issue. I mean, I'm often terrified at the intersection of Bassett's Bridge Road and 195 because I'm very observant of the stoplight there.
Oh yeah,
and I stop and I wait, and people cut the corner so close. They come in hot and they cut the corner.
They do.
I'm so afraid they're going to come into my car.
I know.
I see people cutting the corner really hard all the time. When I make that turn, I'm really careful to swing out wide so I'm nowhere near the car that's in the other lane. And the other thing is, you know, I'm just aghast at how many people don't use their turn signal. That you think that would just be an obvious thing to do. And I see it all the time. People just don't use their turn signal. You don't know which way they're going.
And the turn signal is going to be a must use here really soon if the, you know, lane correcting cars come into play. Because when they come into play, if you're not using your turn signal, the car will auto-correct you back into the lane.
You won't be able to change lanes.
And you won't be able to change lanes.
Wow.
So it will eventually instruct people by default that they're going to have to. You know, they're just gonna
are you saying that if you don't have your turn signal on, the car won't turn right?
It'll turn, but it'll throw the car back into the lane.
So, oh my goodness.
That just
doesn't sound safe.
You know, didn't we do an entire show on this?
On lane correction.
It's not entirely safe. What the problem is that
so
people,
if you don't have your turn signal on, you can't make you're thwarted from, like, the car's going to jump, like you will attempt to make your turn and the car will lane correct and you won't be able to make your turn. That could be deadly.
That's exactly what happened to Mike from Eastford when he and his wife were riding by your office that day.
Yeah.
That the car veered out like it was going to go around them and then was thrown back into him and it almost hit him because of it. And it's because of lane correction that happened. Yeah, so people are just going to have to learn to do something very, very simple, and that is they're going to have to learn how to use their turn signal.
Right.
The other thing is a lot of these autonomous vehicles, or I think most of them now, will not allow you to put them into autopilot, as it's called, and take your hands off the steering wheel at the same time. So you have to have a hand on the steering wheel or else the autopilot will kick off.
Oh.
So that's one way of making it safer, so to speak. But they, those vehicles just frighten me. They just frighten me. They are not going to be soft and squishy people friendly. They're really not. I just don't like it. So allowing cyclists to yield at stop signs has long been controversial, though. States and cities across the country have been slow to adopt the law, even though it's been successfully implemented in Idaho for more than 35 years. The law has eluded approval in many states in the past, including Minnesota in 2008, Oklahoma in 2016, Utah and Arizona in 2011, and California in 2017 and 2018. So, opponents of the Oregon law have claimed that it will only encourage bad behavior, echoing concerns stated by many others across the country. As reported by the Oregonian, Representative Lynn Findley, Republican Vale, said, "We are going to teach our kids to blow through stop signs. How about if we just teach our kids to ride bicycles, Lynn?" Anyway, because right now, kids aren't riding bicycles, so it really, who are we teaching to do what? It really is a big question. So these concerns were disproven in a study by the University of California, Berkeley in 2010 on a bicycle safety and choice article. Researcher Jason N. Meggs looked into Idaho with a longstanding Idaho stop law and determined that bicycle safety was 30.4% better in Idaho than in comparison cities lacking the law. And in the first year after adopting the Idaho state, bicycle injuries actually declined by 14.5%. Now, I can see this. Here you are. You're sitting at a stop sign. You're waiting for the moment to go, or the traffic light, and you're waiting for the moment to go, and a car who is not paying attention comes up in behind you and runs you over at the stop sign. That can happen because you're just sitting there. They're looking for a car. What you have to understand is when you're out riding your bicycle, and I push this really, really hard when I talk to people about this, is you have to understand the person who is driving the motorized vehicle is not looking for bicycles or pedestrians. They are looking for another motorized vehicle. That's what's in their frame of mind. That's where they're at. So you have to understand that, boy, put that flashing light on the back of your bike, please. Do it. If you're going to ride in traffic, you really should be very, very visible. Make it easy to see. The flashing lights, I really think, are the best way to do it. They definitely cause people to pay a lot closer attention, for sure. And I'm really becoming a fan of the flashing front light. I just think that's great. You can see them from a quarter mile away. They're really wonderful, and you know a cyclist is coming up the road. But anyway, that's our little piece here about should cyclists be allowed to yield at stop signs? I say yes. That's how I feel about it, definitely. Moving on to our next item on my list, the maintenance minute. I'm gonna get a ration of you know what when I mention this, but I'm going to mention it. Check your wheels carefully. Rim damage. Okay. The reason I'm going to get a ration of you know what on this is because last weekend Fran and I were down at the Farm to Fork Fondo in Asheville, North Carolina, and we put her old bicycle, her old Pinarello, into the trailer to have it trailered down there so we didn't have to figure out a way to get it down to Asheville because, you know, it's a long ways away and you've got to put it on an airplane, you got to put it in a box, you got to go through all. So anyway, the folks from Renegade Sports were kind enough to bring our Fran's bike with them. Unfortunately, Ron did not check the bike over closely because it's just been sitting on a trainer, so it's been no big deal, and checked to see that the wheels on the bike, after tens of thousands of miles of Fran riding her bike like a madwoman, they were worn out. So what do you mean the wheels were worn out? Okay, what you need to do is you need to check for rim damage. What had happened is that the wheels actually, if you looked at them from a side view, you could see the brake pads had rubbed into the aluminum rims hard enough that it started to gouge out the rim. So the rims were actually becoming concave. And not a big deal, except that eventually they get really thin. And if they get really thin with a certain amount of tire pressure in the tire, you could literally blow the rim apart, and that would not be a good thing. So I brought it to one of the bicycle mechanics who was there servicing all the bikes and asked him to just check the bike over before Fran took it for a ride, and he came back to me and said, Ron, we got a problem. And what it was that the wheels were what he felt to be unsafe. So these are things you need to take a look at, all right? Because if you look at a road bike wheel, it makes almost 500 rotations for every kilometer that's traveled. During that time, the rim is constantly compressed under the weight of the rider, such that every spoke is loaded and unloaded with every rotation. The ongoing cycle of the radial load takes its toll on the wheel, inevitably producing fatigue in one or more of the components, although it's the spokes that typically suffer the most. But the thing that you also need to look at, and this is another thing as far as wheels go, people will tell me, yeah, I was riding my bike last week and I broke a spoke. Can you believe that? If you break a spoke, my feeling when I owned the bicycle shop was, how long have you been riding on the wheels? Are they a few years old? Are they many thousands of miles old? What generally is the condition of the wheel? And a lot of times it will be, I've had those wheels for 4 years or whatever, and I just broke a spoke. Geez, they've been great up to this point. My recommendation to people when they came in with a broken spoke, if they were trying to go out and ride their bike immediately and, you know, they really wanted to have that wheel fixed so they could get out and ride right away, we generally were able to put a new spoke in, give it a quick true, and send them on their way. But my recommendation was, if you break one, you will break many more, because eventually the spokes get brittle. There's a lot of tension on them. There's a lot of, they get loaded and unloaded with your weight as they spin around. So eventually they're going to get to the point where they could fatigue down by the tip of the wheel or down by the tip, down by the hub, or also they could fatigue up where the spoke nipple screws in too, because, you know, it's a piece of steel, and it's threaded, and the threads cause a stress riser. So eventually they could fatigue there too. So if you broke one and you've been riding them for 10,000 miles or whatever it may be, maybe you're a mountain bike rider and you've been riding them off the road for like 4 or 5 seasons and now you're starting to break spokes, it's time to replace the spokes. It's time to rebuild the wheels, or maybe it's time to take a look at another set of wheels. And now that's when you want to examine the condition of the hubs, and you want to examine the condition of the rims. In Fran's case, the condition of the rim was that she had used her brakes enough on those rims that they wore down. They just wore down. And if you were to look at it from a side view, if you could actually look at it that way, what you would see is, instead of it being a flat surface that the brakes would be pushing up against, it was actually concave. So as the brake pads erode the track of the rim, they become concave and they weaken, until there comes a point when the tire beads can no longer be contained. If the tire bead can't be contained anymore, the pressure of the tire will actually explode the rim apart. So that's a problem. And that's where Fran was at. She was down to very, very little, maybe 1 or 2 millimeters left of material left on the actual rim. Now, if you have disc brakes, then you don't have to worry about this as much because you've got disc brakes. But what I have found with disc brakes, and I was discussing this with the bicycle mechanic as he was working on her bike, is that disc brake pads tend to wear out a lot quicker than rubber rim pads do. So anyway, you have to check all these things. These are things that you should be doing that for. So you want to measure and monitor the thickness of the rim walls. If you're really, really if you're really, really good about this and you could take a measuring implement and you could actually measure the thickness of the wall when it's new and write it down, maybe you'll write it down where you put your, you know, numbers for, I have a little list of things like when I replace a chain on a bike, I put down the mileage that that I have on my cycle computer, so I know how many miles I can get out of that chain before I want to replace the chain. Maybe you put it on that little list. Keep a little spreadsheet in your repair area, and you can write that down. Because every year when you're taking your bike apart, like you should be in the wintertime to overhaul it and make sure everything is tip-top shape for the spring, you can check with a set of calipers and check and see how much actual rim material you have lost over the year. Now, if you're someone who is not using the brakes very heavily, then you know you're not gonna have as much of a problem with this. But if you frequently are using your brakes and you are known to go through brake pads on a fairly regular basis, even rim style pads, then you definitely want to check this. So rim walls are typically less than 2 millimeters thick. So anything that's concave is approaching 1 millimeter is very significant and worrying, especially for clincher rims, because the clincher rims have a lot of pressure on them. They have an awful lot of pressure on them because of the pressure in the tire. So that is my Mechanical Minute tip of the week. Don't forget to check your rims and your wheels and make sure that they're in top-notch condition when you get ready to ride. And you also want to be very, very aware should you have a crash or something like that, and you want to make sure that you don't have any excessive damage on the wheels by an impact that you may have with the crash. Also, if you are commuting and you're riding in the city and you're riding through a lot of rough roads and potholes and all that, you want to inspect the rims occasionally and make sure there's no bulge in the rim as it goes around. You would know that when you tap on the brakes because you'd feel it grab at that point, and that's not a good thing to have happen. You don't want anything. You don't want that rim grabbing with the brake pad, because it could, especially if it's in the front, it could throw you over the handlebars, or if it's in the back, it could lock up the rear wheel and you could skid, and therefore losing control of the bike. So inspect your wheels, spin the wheels, check the seating of the tires, test for play in the bearings, check the brake track, assess that, see what it looks like, squeeze the spokes, inspect the brake pads, inspect the rims and hubs, and check each axle, make sure everything is good. So that is my maintenance minute, a little item that we should check into. You can find a lot of different tips online for this sort of thing. If you ride in a very flat area, you'll probably have less problems with this. If you ride where we ride up in the hills all the time, you're going to be using your brakes more. So you definitely want to check and see. If you are a heavier rider, you're going to also be looking at this a lot more closely than you are if you're a light rider. So these are definitely little tips you might want to check into just to be sure, so you don't have a disappointment. Now, big shout out to Look Cycling Support. They were really, really nice, and they happen to have another set of wheels for us, and we were able to put them onto Fran's bike, and she had a bike to ride, which
was very nice of Look to do that.
Really, really nice. So a big shout out to Look. They had their folks down from Massachusetts that were there for doing neutral support like they would for a bicycle race. And right now the bicycle racing scene is very thin. So they had some time and they came down and they helped out with the Farm to Fork Fondo. So that was kind of a cool thing. So that's my little piece on wheels and checking them out and making sure that your wheels are ready to go. So last week we talked about the Tour de France, because it's that time of year, July 6th, this Saturday. Hello, here it comes. Here we go, the 2019 Tour de France.
Wow, here, it's time for the Tour de France.
And last week I talked about the fact that the we were talking about the actual course and what it was all about. And I went through a step-by-step description of that. So check for that podcast when it comes out, and you can see a little bit more of what I related to my listeners about the Tour de France. And it is going to be a hilly one this year. Less flat stages, more hilly stages. Should be a very interesting tour, especially interesting because there are people that are not riding the tour that normally ride the tour, like Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin. They're out of the tour, and Cavendish is out now too. I noticed that was another person is not going to be riding in the tour this year. So this is going to be the year of the French. It is going to be the year of the Colombians. We shall see what happens between both of them, but I think we're going to start seeing a very, very different Tour de France this year. And I'm excited. I think it's going to be great. Only four Americans are actually going to be competing in this year's Tour de France, which is interesting because we've always had quite a number of them, and often I'll be looking at the lineup and I'll see this person from the U.S. I don't even know who they are. And back in 2017, there were only three Americans that started the race. So while it's a meager showing compared to the European counterparts, and none are serious contenders for the overall win, a few of the Americans riding this year do excite us for various reasons. So this is the first one we're going to look at here is Ben King. Okay, Ben King is back. He is riding for Dimension Data, is who he's riding for, BMC Dimension Data. And he's been racing for a while. I think he won the U.S. Yeah, he won the U.S. Professional National Championship at age 21. And last year in the Vuelta a España, he took two stages from breakaways. Now he's riding his first tour since 2014 and held a good shot at a stage win. This year, the race will favor aggressive opportunists, which King showed himself to be in Spain last summer. Dimension Data, meanwhile, has had a rough season, winning only six races. The team is desperate for any kind of success. And a tour filled with breakaway opportunities, this Virginian could be their best bet. Next one, we've heard of him before. We hear about him every year, TJ Van Garderen. He is riding for EF Education First, and TJ's 30 years old. How about that? So anyway, after the breakup of the team BMC, now CCC, Van Garderen signed on with EF Educational First, a move that seems to have rejuvenated his career. He finished fifth in 2012 and 2014 tours. He had several disappointing seasons. Now in his eighth tour, the man from Montana will serve as Rigoberto Urán's mountain lieutenant. So, ooh boy, that's a hard job. So basically, he has to counter and work with Urán for the entire race, which is going to be tough because if Urán is in a position where he is being attacked by a more aggressive team, then TJ's got to counter it. He's got to go after it. He's got to pull it back in, or he's got to put Urán on his wheel, and he's got to drag him up and keep him in the race. So he certainly seems to be form ready, and he's finished second all in the recent Criterium de Dauphiné, and that's a tough stage race that often provides an early glimpse of the Tour's contenders. If Urán falters, Van Garderen would become the suitable replacement. And in a race without the likes of Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin, he's a contender to win Stage 13's individual time trial. So we'll see what happens. TJ may have a good race. And again, anything can happen. We've been watching bicycle racing for a long time. And Urán could have a problem. He could have a crash. He could fatigue. And then it'll be TJ. He'll be the team leader. And he'll be the team captain. And people will have to work for him. So it's a great position to be in. It's a tough position to be in at the same time, because you've got to be at least as strong as, if not stronger than your contender to be able to run it. And they call him the mountain lieutenant. So we'll see what happens there. So we're interested to see that. Chad Haga, He's 30 years old. He rides for Team Sunweb. We heard this name come up recently. He came up in the Giro d'Italia. He won the final stage individual time trial to earn a milestone victory for the Texan. But with Dumoulin staying home due to injury, Haga will get another shot at the world's biggest cycling race. He completed his first tour last year. Without Dumoulin, Team Sunweb is chasing stage victories given the field. We like Haga's choices for stage 13 in the individual time trial. So once again, another individual time trial one. Joey Roskopp, and he's 29 years old. He rides for CCC. Doesn't really have an overall contender this year, so it's going to bring a group of opportunists hoping to win as many stages as possible, which means Roskopp gets to ride his first Tour de France. It's only his fifth Grand Tour, but he's scored two top five stage finishes, one in the Giro and one in the Vuelta, and will relish a chance to go onto the attack in France with lots of stages designed for breakaways. Don't be surprised if the Georgian comes through to score the biggest win of his career so far. So that's it. That's all there are. There's just four Americans riding in the Tour this year, but they're there, and that's cool, and they had to work really hard to get there, and good for them. Excellent for them. It's this is a really, really grueling and nasty thing to do to your body, and these guys are impressive, to say the least. 10 riders we can't wait to watch for the Tour de France. It's got a mountainous route to only two time trials in the absence of both Froome and Dumoulin, and now Cavendish. I just saw that too, so we lost a sprinter in here too. This should be one of the most open and exciting editions of the race in years. And so I'm going to go down the list here. This actually comes from Bicycling Magazine, and I kind of fact-checked it against Cycling from Great Britain, and they're pretty much in agreement. It's pretty close. Top of the list, Egan Bernal, Team Ineos. He was a late call-up last year, riding his first Tour at only 21 years of age. But he's a young Colombian with an impressive showing, especially in the high mountains, where he helped Geraint Thomas and Froome to their first and third place overall finishes. Once again, a lieutenant. As a result, he was given more responsibility heading into 2019, winning Paris-Nice in March with an all-around performance that had future Grand Tour winner written all over it. With Froome injured and Thomas undertrained, we now get a chance to see what Bernal can do when riding for himself in France. He comes to the race fresh from winning the Tour of Switzerland, taking the reins of Team Ineos, formerly Sky, after Thomas crashed out in stage four. In a Tour with lots of altitude, he's a number one pick for the Tour this year. So we'll see what happens. He's young. He can climb. He's spirited. He takes chances. I like him. I like what I see. I think he's going to be an interesting rider. So we shall see what's going to happen with him. I'm excited for some new people. Geraint Thomas, Team Ineos, also same team. Thomas entered last year as a co-leader for Team Sky along with four-time winner Froome, but Froome crashed out and lost on stage one while Thomas rode a perfect Tour, winning two stages and overall victory. He enters the 2019 race as co-leader yet again, this time alongside Bernal. But he hasn't had a great season so far, few career-defining results and a crash that sent him home early from the Tour de Switzerland, his final tune-up race. That said, he's the defending champ, one of the Tour's most complete riders, and has the support of the cycling's best team. If Bernal falters and Thomas can use the first few days to ride himself into form, another podium finish is certainly within reach. I don't think he's ready. I don't think he's ready, but we'll see. This is one I like. Thibaut Pinot. He's riding for Groupama FDJ, and Pinot became a national hero in France after he won a stage while riding his first Tour back in 2012. He was the youngest rider, immediately gave him the country hope for the his first Tour victory since Bernard Hinault in 1985. If you don't know who Bernard Hinault is and you watch the Tour de France, he's on the finish line almost every year. He's now works with the Tour de France, and you see him up on the awards platform often, handing awards out and all. But he's very, very involved. Bernard, you know, is a very exciting guy to watch. So this could be the chance for the French to finally pull another rider back into the race, which they would love to see. The French go crazy over the Tour, which they should. It's their race. They deserve to be crazy over the Tour. So we'll see what happens. He has focused this season exclusively on the Tour, buoyed by a sixth-place finish in the 2018 Vuelta a España and a win at Lombardia, a one-day fall classic. He looked good in June's Criterium du Dauphiné, finishing fifth overall, and now heads to the Tour as a solid podium contender. That fifth place at the Criterium du Dauphiné, that's a good indicator of someone who was riding smart and is probably very fit. I'd put money on this guy. I think he's got what it takes to do this. He's young, he's exciting. Again, young and exciting. Speaking of not young anymore, but still exciting, Nairo Quintana, riding for Movistar, actually, is how they say it over there. With the absence of Froome and Dumoulin, coupled with the emergence of fellow Colombian Bernal, no one is talking about Nairo Quintana. You should always talk about Nairo Quintana. He's amazing. And he's probably fine with that. It eases some of the pressure he's faced in previous tours. Still, the Peloton shouldn't sleep on Quintana. He's a two-time Grand Tour champion, a three-time Tour de France podium finisher, and excellent in the mountains. He's only 29 years old. Yeah, old. Well within his prime. He's finished no worse than ninth in the four races he's entered this year, and his Movistar team is one of the strongest in the race. Finally, he's fighting for a new contract, which means he'll be extra motivated to win the Grand Tour. That's eluded him. So let's keep our eyes on Nairo. I love watching Nairo Quintana race. He's one of those guys that just, he sits on his bike and he just looks like he belongs there. He's a really pretty rider on his bike. So we'll see what happens. Vincenzo Nibali. Haha, there we are. He's back. He went to the Giro, had some issues. He rides for Bahrain Merida. And he comes to the Tour after finishing second in the Giro d'Italia. He hasn't raced since, though, and he says he's waiting until the Tour's first summit to decide whether he'll compete for the high overall finish or fight for stage wins. It's a bold approach for a 34-year-old Italian, but when you're one of the only two active riders that have won all three Grand Tours, you can get away with taking the Tour de France one day at a time. No matter which path he chooses, expect Nibali to remain one of the most aggressive and exciting riders. Historically, it's been a tough go for someone to be in both races and do as well as he did in the first race. So we'll see what happens. Julian Alaphilippe, he was kind of a new name last year, and he rides for Quick Step, and he won two stages and the polka dot jersey last year in 2019. Tour looks are pretty good. He's a 27-year-old. He'll have free reign to target stages with Quick Step, which comes to the race with an eclectic roster built to win as many stages as possible. And with lots of mountains, fewer field sprints, several tricky uphill stage finishes, we won't be surprised if Alaphilippe scores enough points to contend for both the polka dot and the green jerseys this year. Richie Porte, riding for Trek Segafredo. Richie Porte was with Team BMC, and he struggled to find a new title sponsor in 2019. Porte signed with Trek Segafredo, which has been searching for a true GC contender since Alberto Contador retired in 2017. At best, Porte is just the rider the team had in mind, a climber who can also time trial. He's one of the best all-round stage racers. He's also prone to bad luck after crashing out in the last two Tour de Frances, each time on stage nine. But Trek has built its squad around the Australian, and Porte has enjoyed an anonymous but relatively trouble-free build-up to the Tour. Only a podium finish will justify the investment. It'll be the 34-year-old's last chance to win, as Trek is rumored to be signing Nibali for 2020. Very interesting. And then Rigoberto Urán, EF Education First. He quietly rode to second place in the 2017 Tour, winning Stage 9, and then defending his high overall position in the final 2 weeks. He didn't fare as well in 2018, crashing on the cobbles in Stage 9, dropping out of the race a few days later. 2019 season began with a broken collarbone in March, but his third place finish in the recent route, Day 18, a tough four-day stage race that often serves as a final Tour warm-up, shows that he's ready. It's a wide-open race, and you never know. He's a 32-year-old Colombian, and he certainly has some podium finishes within reach, for sure. So we'll see what happens. Peter Sagan. Sagan heads to the Tour looking to earn his seventh green jersey as winner of the points classification defeat that could set a new record for the race. He got his season off to a bad start as the Slovak took a single victory in January and failed to make a mark at the Cobble Classics, his favorite events of the year. He then took a break before returning and winning the stage at the Tour of California. Then stayed in the U.S. and trained at altitude in Utah, which clearly paid off as he took another stage win at the Tour of Switzerland in mid-June. This year, the Tour de France has several stages with finishes that suit Sagan, meaning that he could very well make history this July. And Romain Bardet, who rides for AG2R Tour La Mondiale, also known as the old Crédit Agricole team. Bardet joins Pinot as the rider's most likely to make or break the hearts of French fans. Still only 28, he has raced the Tour six times, scoring top 10 finishes in the last five. Last year, the only placed sixth, and a disappointment for the Frenchman, made worse by the fact that he also failed to win a stage. So heading into 2019, he's tweaked his program a bit, which means fewer results heading into the Tour, but a greater chance that he hits his peak just as the race enters the mountains. With more altitude and less time trialing, the course suits him well. So those are the 10 to watch. I agree with most of them. I don't believe there's anyone that I feel has been left off this list. I think it's going to be certainly a very, very interesting race this year because of the change. It's a whole new world. Definitely is a whole new world. I have some items here I'd like to talk about that are from bicycle retail world and the bicycle business. Last week I made an announcement. We've got a lot of issues going on right now in the U.S. with tariffs that are being presented for items, especially in the bicycle industry. They're e-bikes, helmets, kids' bikes, anything that's really produced in China is really kind of in a shaky spot right now. And last week I mentioned that Giant Bicycles, which is one of the larger manufacturers of bicycles in Asia, has decided to move all their manufacturing to Taiwan because they have such a large manufacturing facility that they have the capability of doing that. They're one of the few companies that has that ability. And so they're going to be doing that, and they're going to be relatively safe because of it. But there are a lot of companies that are still producing in China. And with the new Trump China bans that are out there, this is certainly a problem, and it is going to affect the retail business here in the United States and what you're going to pay for not only bicycles, but all the parts that are necessary and used to fix them. We don't manufacture those here. The fact that we are throwing tariffs out on equipment that you rarely see manufactured here in the U.S., it really infuriates me that we would have anything like this touched. But you know what? This is where we're at. So there's a word going around the Chinese internet describing the tight economic bonds that have been formed between the two largest economies since the establishing of formal diplomatic and trade relationships in the 1980s. Chimerica is what they call it. So anyway, the pressure is building to shift the bike business out of China. But it's an article that was written in Bicycle Retailer by Jay Townley, who is an industry consultant. He's been involved with the bike industry as long as I was there. He's saying that this probably isn't going to happen. It could take the reality, really, is what it comes down to, is it could take 2 to 4 years until 2021 and 2023 to completely resource U.S. business out of China. And then, you know, who knows who our administration is going to be angry with then. We shall see. But anyway, this is a problem. It's aggravating to me because it is an opportunity for us to get more people on bicycles if they are not spending a small fortune on them. There are economical reasons why I would like to continue to see the bikes built and produced over there. Obviously, the quality level is very high now. It's come up dramatically from where it was a number of years ago. And so anyway, that's where we're at. And there is some light here, and that light is, I believe, that there has been a stall on the trade tariffs. And Trump has put additional tariffs on hold after the G20 summit on Saturday. So he said he would hold off imposing additional tariffs, $300 billion worth of Chinese imports, a list that includes bicycle products that were not included in the earlier tariff rounds, which remain in place. So that's the good news. The good news is that that the tariffs are currently on hold, which is helpful. But we just don't know. Everything is just so volatile in this administration. It's very, very difficult. So here we are. You know, we're kind of held hostage here in the bike industry as far as the tariffs go. And this is what we're going to have to work with and what we're going to have to deal with. It's kind of a sad day, but it's what it is. So another little piece which I just picked up, and I did not expect to see this because it's our neighboring state of Massachusetts. And it's basically People for Bikes the Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation is proposing new rules which would prohibit the use of electric bikes on all natural service trails, including single track, improved trails that are less than 8 feet wide, and dirt roads that are not open to vehicular traffic. This rule could negatively impact your e-mountain bike sales or cause confusion for customers that are interested in e-mountain bikes. So there is actually if you go to People for Bikes, it's peopleforbikes.org, and you go there, you will see that they actually have a petition. If you would like to sign it, you can sign it. So if you're listening and you're from Massachusetts and you would like to make mention of that, you can. But it appears that you can... it's just for Massachusetts, according to this. So there is a petition that you could take action on if you wanted to, if you were not feeling right about this. Because, you know, I look at this and an e-mountain bike. Okay, why is it okay for you to ride an e-road bike on the trails, but not okay to ride an e-mountain bike on the trails? Many people choose the mountain bike over the road bike because of the stability issue. And when you're riding on a very heavy machine like an e-bike, obviously stability is a concern. So little shout out to the state of Massachusetts. They shouldn't be doing this, but you know, they're doing what they're doing, and that's all we've got to work with. So it's unfortunate, like I say. There's just so many things that are going on right now in the bicycle world. The tariffs are really maddening to me. There's plenty more to talk about, but we're going to start running out of time here because we are getting near the end of the show. So I'm going to move on down to my list here. And We can go over next week. We may talk about cycling being one of the best activities you can do to banish a bad day and mood changes. We can talk about that. I did have the opportunity when I was out on a business call to stop by the Bike New Britain, which is a number of my friends who have formed this organization, which is essentially teaching young inner city kids and others how to repair bicycles and giving them an opportunity to get a bike and work a bike off for that. They do primarily just work on used bicycles, and they do a lot of refurbishes, very similar to BCCO in Hartford, similar idea as far as that goes. So I did speak with them, and it looks like sometime this month we are going to bring a few of those guys on, and we'll get some good old salts, as Fran likes to call them.
Say their names again. What's the name of the organization again?
It's Bike New Britain.
Okay.
So it's going to be Bike New Britain. And so we will get them in. They promised me that they would come on the air and we could do this. So I'm hoping that that Cliff and Bruce all are listening here. Mark are all listening to the show, and I'm trying to encourage them to come on the show. So I'll keep bothering them. They're really interesting guys. They've been in the business for as long as I have. We all have some great stories to tell, so it'll be a fun thing. So looking forward to them. Moving on to our events. Remember, the Tuesday night series in East Hartford is still on. That is put on by the by CCAP, the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program, and it is a training race, and it is simply to teach you how to race your bike and give you some practice out there, too. We also have an announcement which just came out, too. I'm going to throw this in on a segue. The Jed Kornbluh, who we had on the air a couple of weeks ago with Jeremy Brazil, he has just been announced as the new director of and CEO of Connecticut Cycling Advanced Program. Huge shout out to Jed. Congratulations. You're gonna be great. You're gonna do a great job at it. You have enormous shoes to fill, but that's okay. That's okay. They're good shoes, and it's a great program, and we're really looking forward to talking to you in the future. So, Jed, if you're listening, this is a shout out to you. Looking forward to getting you back on the air and talking about what your plans are for Connecticut Cycling Advanced Program in the future. So can't wait to hear more on that. Moving on, though, we're going to go to, if you need to move more events that are coming up, the events are really, really thin right now. Bike racing is super thin. I don't know what's going on. There's not a lot going on. There is even a non-sanctioned race in Palmer, Massachusetts, coming up for 4th of July weekend, which is, I mean, crazy. I mean, it's non-USA Cycling, non-sanctioned event. So
I know that my friend Kim is racing on Sunday.
She's probably racing in the Palmer race.
Oh.
But anyway, so that's a sensitive subject. We won't get deep on that one. So you can click on the calendar page on BikeReg, BikeReg.com, and you can check that out. Also coming up on July 13th in Avon, Connecticut, E-Race, 25, 50, and 100-mile road rides. And I know Fran has done that in the past, and it's a well-organized race.
Yeah.
And
it's not a race.
It's not a race. I mean, excuse me, a well-organized ride. It's actually a ride for cancer.
Yeah,
I
for
think.
The Helen Harry Gray Center in Avon.
Very good. Very good. Thanks. And on July 14th.
What does E-Race stand for?
Go ahead.
Everybody Run and Ride Against Cancer Every Day.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. That's nice. That's really nice.
Yes, it is.
So,
and our friend Kim DeBoard is a member of that team.
Yes, and there's a team that's based around it.
That's
which
right.
Which is really cool.
And Laura Summers.
Yep. And they're good folks.
Yes.
All good folks. On July 14th, the day after that, the Summer Breeze Ride for Autism in Madison, Connecticut.
Vive la France.
Yeah. And
that's Bastille Day.
That is Bastille Day. Yes, it is. And on July 19th to July 21st, the League Cycling Instructor Seminar, which is going to be in, I think they moved it to Glastonbury, but you can check with the Center of Latino Progress in Hartford, and they'll tell you a little bit more about that. And the registration forms can be found for that on Bike Walk CT. So you can check there and find out more about that. Also on the 28th of...
What's happening on July 21st?
July 21st. What's happening on July 21st?
In the Hero Islands.
Oh, yeah. Fran and I will be at the third Farm to Fork Fondo put on by Renegade Sports. And I will be there announcing, and Fran will be there helping and riding.
Yes. So,
and it's the flattest ride you will ever find in Vermont.
Right.
Because it's on South Hero Island
I'm
and
doing the
islands.
Grand Fondo.
And the funny thing is the elevation, the highest elevation, I think, is 278 feet.
That's funny.
And you can see the water almost all the time. It's really beautiful. It's a great place.
Meanwhile,
awesome place.
This weekend, my highest elevation was probably 2,400 feet.
Yeah, that was a different story. Yeah, well, you know, it's North Carolina. It's in the mountains. You know, it's where it is.
Great Smokies.
The Great Smokies. Yeah. So, July 28th, George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor. Yeah, the Major Taylor. Hey, I listened to an awesome, and I think I shared it on my Facebook page. And if I didn't, I will make sure I post it there. There's a great podcast that was put out by an NPR person. Oh, come on now. It was wasn't This American Life. It was the other one.
Colin McEnroe?
No. Big NPR. So anyway, it was a story all about the Major Taylor and who Major Taylor was and the life and history of Major Taylor. It's really fascinating. There's a new book out about it. So this gentleman had his book out, and they put together a nice little segment about Major Taylor. It was fascinating. And a big shout out to Tony for sending me in that direction, because it was a pretty cool thing to listen to. And anyway, so it's the last day in Sunday in July.
It was Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, thank you.
Terry Gross.
It was Terry Gross, right.
Yay.
It was Terry Gross. So Terry Gross did one of her reporters did this one. But it was very, very well done. So if you get a chance to listen to that, definitely listen to that.
It's, Dave Davis.
Yeah, definitely listen to it. It's extremely well done. It was really cool. On July 28th, and it is a very, very short, and I mean really, really short, uphill time trial on a wicked steep street in Worcester, Mass., where young Major Taylor proved himself in the 1890s. The history of Major Taylor is fascinating. You should definitely check that out. On July 27th, I missed this one, just before that date, there is the Berkshire Brevet Petersburg 300 kilometer in Westfield, Massachusetts.
Why?
Because it's there, and
right.
There are those who will do it.
Oh.
On back to July 28th, the 2019 Thread City Century, Sunday, July 28th, 2019. All rides start and finish at Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. Want to see the roads that Fran and I are always boasting about? Come out. Check it out. There's 102, an 84, a 66, and a 43-mile ride. You can find out more about that on threadcitycyclers.com. And, of course, the Steeplechase bicycle tour, which is Saturday, August 17th, 100-mile tour, 62.5-mile tour, 50-mile tour, 35-mile tour, 20-mile tour, and a 5-mile walk. It's a really nice event. We'll have more information on that, and also we will have some guests on the show for that, and looking forward to that coming up. It's been going on for, gosh, I think 28 years now, long time. And once again, more beautiful roads in northeastern Connecticut. If you have not been acquainted with them, you will be if you come and do the Steeplechase. Very cool. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk. I am Pedaling Ron. And this is my co-host, Fran Storch, with a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast, and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.